This is The Gardening Show
with Master Gardener Bob Harris
on WESB.
Presented by Worth W. Smith Hardware.
Call the show 368-WESB.
That's 368-9372.
And good morning. We are with Master Gardener Bob Harris. I am Igor, and joining us in studio is my French bulldog, Lacey. So if you hear a snort every now and then, that's her just kind of hanging out. And wow, gorgeous day out, Bob. A lot of people all gardening already.
Yeah.
I see a lot of people planting on my way into the show today. And
good.
Yeah. They looking good.
Yep. And again, that hint about that. And the whole show is going to be about hints and tips. Supplies is short again this year. Like last year. Mm. So when you go to pick up your plants, be prepared to change your plan a little bit and just accept it. And
roll with the punches.
Yeah,
huh?
Just try to roll with the punches.
Okay.
It's going to take a while to get gardening back the way it used to be. And I'm thankful that there's a lot of new gardeners, and I hope they really stick to it.
What in particular is a shortage, just right offhand, that you can...
Oh, all gardening supplies. Plants, peat
moss. The actual plants themselves.
Yep.
Oh, okay.
All the supplies that would go with gardening.
Oh, okay.
A bit of a shortage. Maybe not a real shortage, but so many new gardeners out there that they're buying up the product quickly.
Can't keep up with the demand.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. If you have a question for Bob, by the way, phone lines are always open. Doesn't matter what we're talking about, too.
That's right.
We will answer and hopefully get you some tips that you can use. And that number again is 814-368-9372. And we're on Facebook Live. You can comment there or email us garden@wesb.com.
So I want to start out with wet soil because we had a real rain here just lately. And so use that rain to let you know where the wet spots are in your garden or yard, and you can correct that drainage, you know. So really take advantage. I always go out after a rain, check my yard for areas.
Where it's pooling up.
Yeah, because it can change. Even in your flower and vegetable and perennial beds, a lot of times a hard rain causes a crust on top of the soil where the rain has beat down and all the fine soil has kind of pooled into one area and formed that crust. Now, that crust can be real detrimental to your beds. It is such fine material that it can stop more water from going directly in. It'll run off that area. And it can stop the exchange of gases in and out of the soil because it's such a fine crusty layer. So it's a good idea after a hard rain that you inspect the top of the soil. And if you do think there is a crust forming, take your garden claw and scratch the surface to break that crust layer. They have a real term for it, but it just escapes me real right now.
With a crust layer?
Or, yeah.
Now, how long after the rain do you go check out? Like the next day or something?
Yeah, next day or when you possibly can. And scratch that surface so you let the gas exchange in and out of the soil, or the next rain is able to hit the soil and go down in, or when you water, it's able to go down in. That can cause a bit of a problem. So that takes me to a little more about that crusty layer. I know it's getting popular with no-till gardenings. And what can happen around here is after a few hard rains, a lot of those fine, silty materials, because we have a lot of them in our area with the clay, they can collect in that area, and it becomes very hard-packed. And that can cause even a bit of a slope to hold water. It pools right up. And, of course, that can be real hard on plants. So I still go by the old method of rototilling. Mm. My vegetable bed and the flower beds, because that helps break up that crust layer and helps break up where all the fine material has collected and helps air and the gas get in and out of the soil, and plus the watering. So that compacted after a rain from no tilling for quite a while can cause compacted soil. And of course, it makes it hard for plants to spread their roots through that area. And it really makes it very difficult for rain to penetrate and gases to get out of the soil. So that's another hint. You know, you choose the way you want to do, but I'm a real firm believer in rototilling. If you don't have a rototiller, then get a potato fork, you know, and you can fork the soil.
What about like one of those garden weasels or something?
Yeah, anything like that, just to break it up a bit.
Mm-hmm.
And because you probably heard me say it a dozen times, plants need air just as much as they need water, and that's going to help them. Also, once in a while, a tip that I like to do, and this will be mostly in my vegetable garden, is I don't really preach collecting your grass clippings. I like to leave them in place because they are fertilizer for your grass. But once in a while, I will collect my grass clippings and put them right on top as a mulch in the vegetable garden. Tomato plants really love it. You can even put it there quite thick, you know, 3, 4, 5, 6 inches thick around your tomato plants. Believe me, they'll really enjoy it. You'll see them within a week or two. They get a jump start growing like crazy.
What does that actually do? Like, how do they ingest the grass clippings?
Okay, a couple things. Grass, the green part of the grass is all basically nitrogen. And of course, nitrogen is the number one material that plants seek for growth. Number two, as it starts to rot down, it heats up the soil. And most of our garden plants are from the tropics, so mm-hmm. they like really warm soil, and that's going to encourage warm soil. But on the other side of the coin, if we get a real hot, dry time, that grass clipping or leaf or any mulch area helps keep the soil from getting too hot from the sun really cooking it.
So it's like insulation.
Yeah,
either way.
Exactly. That's what it is, insulation. Mm, and
cool.
It helps conserve the moisture. It makes it a little harder for the soil water to evaporate through that mulch layer. So it can benefit us in several ways. But number one, you'll see, especially if you use grass clippings, you'll see a real jump in growth of all your plants because of all that nitrogen that's in your grass. Now, don't collect grass clippings after you've done a weed and feed. I don't recommend that at all because you could be putting an herbicide into your garden and that can affect them. Or you could be vacuuming up that fertilizer you just put down or lime and taking it away from your lawn, putting it in your garden.
Good point.
So if you have done a treatment on your lawn, wait a couple mows, then on that third mow, then you can collect those clippings and put them into your garden safely.
You have a question for Bob? 814-368-9372. That's 814-368-9372.
So another thing you should do once in a while, you know, I'm talking about after you've planted your garden. Mm-hmm. You should monitor your garden. And a couple tricks for monitoring is some sticky traps. Now, you can make your own sticky traps. You can take a ping pong ball, a golf ball, or any kind of ball at all, hang it on a string, and smear Vaseline or some sticky substance on it, and hang it in the garden so that any bugs that are in there, once in a while, some will get caught in that sticky stuff. And then you can look and see if they're harmful bugs or not harmful bugs. And then you'll know what to do next. If there's a lot of harmful bugs on your little sticky trap, then you know that maybe it's time to do some picking of the harmful bugs, or maybe even you may have to even do a little spray, an insecticide. So the sticky traps can be very helpful, and you can even use duct tape turned inside out so the sticky part is out. That one works real well. But I like to use anything that's really yellow. Insects seem to be attracted to yellow surfaces, most insects. There are some that are only attracted to blue. So I usually do a combination of yellow and blue.
Wow.
And put a sticky substance on. And then you can monitor that.
Now, did you say you have to suspend it or do you put it on the ground?
I would recommend suspending
okay.
it.
Okay. Yeah. Like with a string or something.
Yeah. Now, of course, one of the big ones to monitor for is the slugs in Bradford. We just have a lot of them because it's cool and damp, and we have a lot of foliage everywhere, so we have a large population of slugs. And those you can only monitor late in the evening after the sun goes down because they don't appear in the daytime or early in the morning, you know, before 9 a.m. Go out there, and you'll see them crawling around. And then you can pick them if you want to. Or do a little shake of salt on them. That destroys them right away. And that's how we can monitor and look for slugs. Now, a couple hints about weeds in your garden. I know it's getting even popular to let some weeds grow, you know, trying to go back to nature like we did in the 60s. My thoughts is I'm against it. Mm-hmm. Because I put a lot of time and energy into my vegetable garden and flower beds. And weeds harbor insects that can destroy my plants. And worse, those weeds can harbor disease and pests without any fungus and viruses, without any signs of those diseases or viruses on the weed. They are called host plants. They can host that disease, fungus, or virus. And of course, an insect lands on that plant, that weed, takes a bite, and then heads over to my tomato plant and takes a bite, and it transfers that disease, virus, or fungus to that plant.
Now, if somebody does want to have the natural look, is there something they can do to cut down on that kind of negative aspect of it?
No, you really can't cut down. You just learn.
There's no magic dust you sprinkle on it. And then,
no.
Oh.
You just learn to accept there's going to be some damage.
There's consequences for that. Beautiful.
Yeah. And that's all right, too. Yep.
Depends on what you want to do.
Yeah, it depends on what you want to do. So maybe think about the weeds in your yard. You can hand pull them. You can use herbicides. But if you're using herbicides, I want to go into that because we are heading into some 80-degree days.
Mm.
Any herbicide or insecticide can be greatly affected by warm temperatures, anything over 80, especially herbicides. They become a vapor rather than a liquid. As soon as you spray it and they hit that hot air, it becomes a vapor. And that can continue to float just above. Say you're trying to fight dandelions in your grass. It can float just above that plant as a vapor and float even to your neighbor's yard until it finally touches a leaf surface that's cool. Then it becomes a liquid. Then it starts to affect that plant. So never spray herbicides or insecticides when the temperature is above 80. It's very dangerous.
All right. Wow, good advice. Master Gardener Bob Harris here to answer your questions. I see we have a couple of Facebook messages. We'll get to those next, and we'll take a short break. But if you do have a phone call, if you have a question, call us, 814-368-9372, and we will be right back with more Gardening Show right here on B107.5 FM.
If you need it, you'll find it at Worth W. Smith Company Hardware in Bradford. You'll now find a full line of powerful 20-watt DeWalt power tools. For your painting projects, you'll find a big selection of quality Valspar paints and Cabot stains, as well as all the accessories you'll need. Check out their newly expanded full line of sanding belts for all purposes. And for your outdoor projects, you'll find wheelbarrows, tarps, and whatever else you need. It's true. If you need it, you'll always find it at Worth W. Smith Company Hardware in Bradford.
And welcome back to the Gardening Show right here on B107.5. We're on Facebook Live, facebook.com/WESB107.5. And we're on the air, of course. And on the phone, we have a phone call coming in, 814-368-9372. And then we'll get to some Facebook messages and answer those questions. Hi, good morning. You're on the gardening show.
Good morning.
Good morning.
A question about organic fertilizer.
Yes.
Vegetable garden. I usually use Miracle-Gro, but I kind of want to get away from it.
Are you asking, do I recommend organic fertilizers?
Yes.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. Yeah. If you can get them, by all means, it's really preferable that you use organic fertilizers. I don't know what else to say about that.
Is that one of those things that might be in short supply because of the demand?
Yes. Yeah. So if you find it, get it right away. You know, the price may have increased like everything else, but it's well worth it. I would use it myself, and I recommend it.
Is there a certain brand or...
Yeah, I like to stick with name brands. If I don't recognize the name of that company, then I'm probably not going to purchase it because there are a lot of companies out there making stuff that just isn't very high quality. So, yeah, I'd stick to the name brands.
Do you think liquid is the best as far as that?
I like to use a combination of dry and liquid. At times, a plant needs a quick fix. So the liquid is going to give it that quick fix, but the liquid does not stay in the soil very long because it's soluble. So a few rains washes it away, but the dry can remain there for a long period of time, even after several rains. Only a little bit of it at a time dissolves, so it's a long-lasting one. But I like to go by the two of them. I'll use a liquid for a while when I think I need it, and I also apply the dry.
Okay, great. Thank you.
You bet. And a little bit is good. A little bit more is not good.
Okay.
Okay.
Good advice. Thank you so much for the phone call. Have a great weekend.
Yep, you too. Thank you.
And we have a couple Facebook messages if we'd like to get to those.
Yeah.
Melissa says, does neem oil really work? I have indoor plants and lots of tiny bugs. I've tried everything and nothing gets rid of those. Will repotting help?
Yes, yes, yes. Oh. Neem oil does work. It's a very good product. Read the directions, apply it correctly, and it should work. Now, if you've had that neem oil for a year or two, it loses some of its efficacy. Easy for me to say, huh?
I don't even know what you still said.
Oh. it loses some of its strength. So if you have an old product, you know, maybe that's why it's not working. Or if you've left that product out in the garage where it's gone through several freezes and thaws through the winter, it loses a lot of its strength that way too. So sometimes it's better to get a small quantity and just enough to get you through the year. So you buy a new one every year. I know it's can be enticing to buy that bigger one because it's a better price when you buy more, but sometimes you're making a mistake because it's going to lose that strength over a couple years. So neem oil does work, but you still have a lot of bugs. Sometimes repotting does help because I'm guessing she has little fungus gnats going on. So probably that bit of soil has developed a lot of fungus in it, and she might be keeping the plants too wet because 99% of all of us keep our plants too wet.
Mm. Okay.
And that encourages fungus to grow in the soil and fungus gnats to increase in population. Another way to do that is a lot of people like to put a little dish of vinegar beside that plant that has a lot of little bugs in it. The bugs will be attracted to that vinegar. They land in there and then they drown. So that's just one little hint there. But again, the neem oil does work if you use it according to the directions.
Like apple cider vinegar?
Yeah, yeah.
She has a follow-up. How do I bring outdoor plants indoors at the end of the season?
Okay, first you got to really inspect them, make sure there's no bugs. And then if you can, give them a good rinsing off with a garden hose. If there's any insects on there, it's a good possibility you'll dislodge them. Then you can safely bring them indoors.
All right. Okay, and then we have one from Joe who says, When's the best time to be trimming up the grapevines to help control them and keep them from going all over the place?
Okay.
I'm able to do it now. Am I able to do it now, or will it damage the vines?
Yeah, if you do it now, Joe, you're going to lessen the fruiting of it, and you're probably not going to damage a grapevine. A grapevine just has a great power to grow, but you won't get as much fruit. The best time to trim grapes is in February.
Wow.
Yeah. Why? They're real dormant and just before they're ready to start growing. So February, March is the best time to prune your grapes. And don't be afraid to trim them back what we call hard. Trim it back a lot, because they have that capability of growing 3, 4, 5 feet in one season, and that new growth is going to produce the best fruit for you.
So the more you trim back, the more opportunity it has to grow new?
Yes.
And produce more fruit?
Yes.
Oh.
And the less opportunity there is to get fungus. Mm. Grapevines have a real tendency to get a fungus on them, especially when they get too many leaves and there's not good air circulation through. So it's a good idea to really keep them thinned out and trimmed in that February, March period.
Okay. Well, there you go. Get in your time machine, Joe, and go back a few months. Take care of that. You can message us as well, facebook.com/WESB1075. Phone lines are still open, 814-368-9372, or send us an email, garden@WESB.com. There's the phone now. Let's go to it. Hi, good morning. You're on the Gardening Show. You have a question for Bob?
Hi.
Hi.
Hey, I was wondering, what is the best time to trim rhododendron?
Okay, that's immediately after they're done blooming is the very best time. Of course, you can trim them anytime you want, but when you don't do it at the correct time, you will be sacrificing some blossoms. But doing it right after they're done blooming, they start to take a little rest for a few weeks, and then they start to regrow. So they have plenty of time to build blossoms for next year. And they also are, after that rest, they have a lot of energy. And so they may produce more branches, so it will thicken or make your rhododendron bushier that at that time. So do it for two reasons. It's a good time right after they bloom to make bigger, better flowers. And it's a good time right after they're done blooming to make a plant bushier.
Okay, good. I thought I heard you talk about that before, but I couldn't remember exact. So I appreciate the information.
You bet. And man, are there a lot of fabulous rhododendrons here in Bradford.
They're all over the place.
Yeah.
I noticed the other day, I'm driving around like, wow, where'd all this come from?
Yep.
all of a sudden.
The rose is the queen of the garden, but the rhododendron is the king.
There you go. Hey, thanks a lot for the call. Have a great weekend.
Thank you.
All right. You got it. 814-368-9372 for your question for Bob. We have about 5 minutes left in the show.
Ah, okay. A couple more hints here. I like to use what I call sacrificial plants for a couple reasons. Number one is I'll plant some flowering plants in my vegetable garden to help attract the pollinators. Because we need that anymore. We just don't have as many pollinators we used to. So anything will help there. Another way I use a sacrificial plant is, and that sacrificial is a plant that I really don't care if it grows real well and produces like it's supposed to.
You just want them to bring the bees.
Yeah. But another way is if I've planted a new garden or a new tree or shrub, I'll plant a few little flowering plants, annuals, that I know will wilt when it's dry. So they'll give me that sign. So I don't have to constantly go out there, that newly planted tree, right at the base of that tree. So I don't have to go out there and dig around in the soil, make sure it's wet or dry. Do I need to water or not? I can just take a quick glimpse at
that's a little plant.
Yeah, that little plant's like impatience, I'm going to say. If they're all wilty, then I know they're dry, so probably that new tree I planted is dry, so it's time to water. But as I'm driving up the driveway from work and I see they're all perky and blooming real well, then it's probably a good idea to just leave everything alone. So I call them sacrificial plants, and they can be very, very valuable to us.
And is there a certain one that you recommend for the vegetable garden and a different one for the tree situation? Or
Vegetable garden would be anything that really just blooms a whole lot. I like petunias because they seem to attract a lot of pollinators. Underneath a tree or a shrub or a shrub border or perennial, I try to find kind of a shady area. I love to use impatiens there because they show their wilt right away when it's dry. And after I water them, they perk right back up. So they're not going to die just because they wilted one time, but they're doing a very important job for me, saving me from walking all around, digging all around every day and worrying right. every day.
Exactly, yep. Now, Kara has a follow-up for the rhododendron.
Okay.
With the rhododendron bush, should you trim that hard when it's time to trim it?
Oh, that's really up to you. But know that if you trim 6 inches off, it's going to grow back a foot.
Oh.
So keep that in mind. But never trim more than half of it off. So if you have a 5 foot tall shrub, don't trim it below 2.5 feet. Because then you've probably taken away too much foliage, and that may weaken the plant and make it real susceptible to a disease or a drought or anything else like that. So be careful. Don't prune off too much in 1 year.
All right. Great advice. And, what about a lilac bush? Stephanie says, should you trim a lilac bush after it blooms?
Yes. Yes. And a lilac, you trim differently than most other shrubs. We don't just trim off the top. What we usually do is pick out the oldest stem on a lilac. They usually have more than one stem. And you trim that right off at the ground level. What that does is encourages new sprouts to come out of the ground. Those sprouts are going to be what we call more floriferous. And that means they're going to flower more and be stronger, because them old stems, after time, they can become plugged up. Their vascular system, just like mine, you know, can become plugged up. And they'll bloom less and less every year and be less productive, make less leaves. So it's a good idea that once in a while, you just follow that oldest stem way back to the ground and trim it right off at the ground level.
One last comment here. Kara says, also a friend gave us a inkberry holly.
Yep.
That they had in the pot for about 3 years, and they've put it in the ground. And do you have any suggestions about care and how much should you trim azaleas and when?
Okay,
that's two questions.
Yeah. The inkberry, just keep it really well watered since it's been in a pot for a long time. It probably got pot bound, so it's going to need that extra bit of water and maybe even a little fertilizer, but keep the fertilizer away from the base of the plant. Try to encourage the roots to spread out and then give it a good mulch layer also, and that should be fine. That'll really help that inkberry out. It's a neat holly, inkberry. And the other question was?
The azaleas. How much should you trim and when?
Oh, okay. Same as a rhododendron, because they are both rhododendrons. So right after
the bloom?
Right after their bloom, that's the time to trim them back. But not more than half of the plant. And most of the time, you only take off a third of the plant.
All right, that is it for today, Bob.
Oh, boy, that went fast.
Yeah, it goes fast. We have a lot of questions. Great questions today,
by the way. There was no questions from our partner here today.
Lacey, the French Bulldog. She was snorting all kinds before we went on the air. We're like, oh, how are we going to do a radio show? I shouldn't have brought her in, but she was a good girl. So, hey, thanks to everybody that called in. We'll be back next week with more of The Gardening Show with Master Gardener Bob Harris, sponsored by Worth W. Smith Hardware. We will see you then. And by the way, check out the show on demand at WESB.com.